Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
I'm Dr. Deborah.
I'm Coach Kelly.
Hello, Coach Kelly.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. You know what? Today, one day off, is our 1 year anniversary for the show.
Yes. Yes. It's so cool, isn't it?
I think we did, our first show was November 18th last year.
Oh, my God.
Hard to believe.
That's insane.
I know.
Holy cow. I feel like it really went so fast.
I know. And I'm just as in love with you now as I was then.
I'm more in love with you, if it's possible.
It hasn't changed.
That's so cool. I feel like we've done so much. Like, so much more variety than I thought. Like,
yeah.
I feel like a year ago, I think we were sort of in the advice genre and just kind of, and now I really feel like we've branched out and done a variety of different shows. I love it.
And who would have thunk that 7 years ago, 8 years ago, when we couldn't do the terrestrial radio we were going to do,
so
here we would be.
It was meant to be.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
It was practice for
us. Yes, yes. So happy anniversary, Coach Kelly.
Yes, you too. I love that.
Do you have any interesting tidbits from the week?
I'm trying to think what was exciting for the week. Well, it's so funny. I was talking to you guys about potty training before. Oh my God. So we're going to Terranea, the resort in Palos Verdes for Thanksgiving. Okay. And I'm so excited because they have this amazing kids club. And so I said to my husband, like, oh yes, we'll get a vacation. You and I can relax. And then something clicked and I was like, uh-oh, I don't know if they have to be potty trained. Because of course my older one is 6 and my other one is 3. And I knew they had to be 3 years old, but I was like, let me just call. So I call and I'm like, do they have to be pot? She's like, mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
I almost ripped off London's diaper, like, as she said that. So I said to my husband, we are doing this now. I want a vacation. So we're in the process, but I've accepted the fact that it may not happen in a week's and a half time. So we'll see.
He's had so many tummy issues.
He's had his GI issues. And he also, like, he's a stubborn little guy. Like, he's just kind of like, when I want to take a piss, I'm going to take a piss, Mom. Like, you're not going to, you know, set me up for that. So we'll see. But that's kind of been my, you know, we'll see.
Does the resort have babysitters?
They do. Okay. Yes. So I did get a list that I will be calling every which one of them. And because I want like a couple hours for my husband and I just to kind of chill out, you know, and this kind of messed up my plan. Like, I, you know, want this lady to freaking change a diaper, but it's not happening.
Oh my goodness.
So that's my story. What's going on with
you'll
you?
You'll be able to hold that over London's head when he's older, when he's going out on a date, and you say, you better do what I say, or I'm going to tell them about the diaper story.
I have too many stories. Like, I feel like I'm going to scare off all their freaking girlfriends.
You do.
Both of them.
Too many stories. You do.
So what's going on in your world?
I have nothing big to report.
Nothing?
I will tell you that I got one night's sleep of almost 7 hours.
That's
a miracle.
Deal.
6 hours and 57 minutes.
Did you do anything different? Can you think of anything that was different?
The cats did not sleep in the bed that night.
That's okay. That's interesting because
We'll have more to say about that with our guest today.
Yes. But I had heard that. I was reading sleep articles that pets can really mess up your sleep. I mean, I know that for sure with my dog, too. They rumble. They rush around. You know, it's a lot. So that's interesting. So what are you going to do?
I don't really think that's the thing.
Oh,
I think
you don't
I was just so?
So
exhausted.
Yeah.
Oh,
because
I mean, I've had them for 10 years and they're just such loves. I couldn't imagine not.
Oh.
I once had a set of cats years ago, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I once tried to do the training them outside of my bedroom. So I would close the door.
Oh.
They literally would run from one end of the apartment to the door like linebackers trying to get into the door. They just could not tolerate the fact that they were not allowed in the room. So I said, what the heck, you know, these are my little loves, so they have to sleep with me. So and they're very fuzzy, and especially if I have a bad dream or something like that, it's always nice to have that little
to like that comfort.
So if you just tuned in, you are listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, and we love your phone calls. If you'd like to call us today at 323-203-0815, and we always enjoy your emails. Why don't we recap from our last show?
So interesting.
We have such an exciting guest today, too.
Oh, yes, exactly. I can't wait. Well, last week we had Kevin McKinley. He's the author of Porn Free, How to Quit Porn and Free Your Left Hand. It was so great. I absolutely loved that show. He basically talked about how, I mean, his whole book is how, you know, how to break free from porn addiction. And he, you know, talked about sort of the research and tools that he's picked up from sociology and biology. And it was just, I don't know, it was really eye-opening for me even to hear even more details. The main thing that stuck out for me in his book and also what he said again was that in today's world, we see more images of naked women than our great-grandparents saw
in a lifetime.
In a lifetime.
Right. They see in 1 week in more one week. Than. Yeah.
I mean,
unbelievable. I was also surprised to hear just how early little boys are getting their hands on
porn.
I guess with, you know, these devices that we have all the time, which, by the way, I should turn mine off.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, so it was just really, really phenomenal and just really interesting. And yeah, so
it was,
I think,
also that's so matter of fact about things, which was nice because there was no shaming component to
exactly.
it. It wasn't like, this is bad.
Right.
It was like, if it's affecting your life, take a look at it. Maybe it's not all that it's cracked up to be.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought it was fantastic. So, and I'm going to recommend that book, you know, to my clients for sure, because I think it is. I think it's great. So, yeah.
Okay.
Really cool.
So without further ado, today we have in studio Dr. Rachel Melamed, a board-certified veterinary behaviorist in private practice in Los Angeles, and she is with us today. And she's also known as an animal shrink, who helps people solve behavior problems with dogs and cats primarily that would otherwise possibly lead to euthanasia and relinquishment. Okay, and did you know that behavioral problems are the number one cause of death in dogs under the age of 3?
Wow.
Who would have known? Who would have known that? Okay,
wow.
Some of these behaviors have a medical basis and require anti-anxiety medications alongside behavior modification. Dr. Rachel has contributed to articles in the New York Times, Care.com, Today's Veterinary News, Dog Fancy, and more. She's authored 3 textbook chapters for veterinarians, Canine Aggression Toward People, Feline Enrichment, and Canine Enrichment. And as a legal expert witness, she also testifies in court on dog bite cases. Yay! Welcome, Dr. Rachel.
Hi.
May we call you Dr. Rachel?
Yes.
Okay.
So cool.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So I think I was mentioning before we started the show that Kelly and I are avid animal lovers.
Love.
I mean, I've had animals since I was yay big. Were you an animal person in childhood, too?
Yes, always.
Yes?
Always.
Yeah. Had horses, rabbits, dogs.
Oh, you did?
Cats.
Yeah.
No pigs that I can remember. Birds. Broken birds.
Yeah.
You know, broken winged birds.
Wow. I'm surprised you didn't become a vet. I'm really shocked.
I know.
I feel like I could see you. That would be like the secondary career for you. And knowing you, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go get my, you know, vet degree also.
So we have so many questions for you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into this? What interested you about doing veterinary behaviorism?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I'm a veterinarian, and I wanted to be a veterinarian since I was a very young girl. And so I became a veterinarian.
That's so
it wasn't
cool.
that easy. As just saying, I want to be a veterinarian.
That's medical school,
it
right?
It really
that's
is. It's a long
medical school.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I did that in near Toronto, Canada, at the Ontario Veterinary College at the University of Guelph.
Oh,
and
cool.
After I did that, I moved to Los Angeles to do an internship, and after that I did a residency for 3 years at UC Davis at the veterinary school there. And so the clinical behavioral residency mm-hmm. was 3 years, and then I wrote an exam, I published research, and I wrote and I became boarded in clinical behavioral medicine.
Wow.
So cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. And I love that you were sharing with me a little bit ago that you primarily work with the behaviors, not necessarily with sick animals, but you did suggest that there are certain diseases and things that will impact behavior. Can you tell us some about
sure.
that?
Sure, yeah. So, you know, it's very important to address both the mental and the physical component mm-hmm. of health because they interact. So mm-hmm. stress can have a very big impact on health and disease. And so it's important as veterinarians in general that both be addressed. Mm-hmm. But there are specific ailments that are related to stress, and that would include, for example, feline idiopathic cystitis in cats.
It's a big
word.
It's a
disease of the urinary tract,
oh.
and it very much involves stress. So cats who pee outside the litter box, sometimes it's a behavioral, there's just simply a behavioral reason for it. Maybe the litter box is dirty. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're being stalked by another cat near the litter box. There could be different reasons, but one reason is that there could be an underlying medical issue. The cat is peeing all over, and that is just one particular disease of cats. After ruling out a lot of other diseases, that's sort of and that is very much related to stress. And mm-hmm. there's actually studies that show that enriching a cat's environment, so more toys, more novelty in the environment, more complexity, more climbing structures, all sorts of puzzle games you can give cats for enrichment is actually very important. And can reduce the clinical signs of this disease.
Oh, interesting.
We call it FIC, and it can actually
God, that's so cool.
It can actually help.
Yeah.
So that's one example.
That's awesome. Do you know what my cat's favorite toy is?
Tell me.
A brown paper bag.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yes. If I have anything that he can crawl, one, the bigger one, yeah. Prowler. He's uh-huh. about 18 pounds, and puppy cat's like 16 pounds. I know. They're large.
oh, my God.
A little on the fat side. We'll talk about that, too. But... you just like bring home, groceries and just throw a bag down on the floor. And that thing, he's got a daytime full of enjoyment.
That's great.
He goes in it. He hides in it. He thinks he can't be seen by
That's
the other
so
cat.
Cute.
The tail will be on the outside, and he thinks he's hidden. He actually believes that
so
he can't be seen.
You don't have to spend a lot of money on
it's
on
so true. No. Exactly. Just the basics. Well, it's so funny because my dog loves boxes. Like I open packages and he like rips it apart and like has a field day. That's so funny.
So cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Animals are so much fun. But, okay, so that's cool. Any other diseases that, like, people should think about if their cats are acting out or their dogs are acting out? What other kinds of things might be going on?
I guess I would just say that, in general, any medical ailment, any disease process, mm-hmm. any painful condition can lower an animal's threshold for behavioral problems, including mm-hmm. aggressive behavior, destructive behavior, just stress in general. Mm-hmm. So if just like with people, if we're not feeling well, we may be more irritable. And
sure. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
But so animals are the same way. And if you notice that your dog or cat is having a behavioral change, for example, and it's very important that you see your veterinarian, make sure that everything is sound and have some lab tests done or basic physical exam. Make sure there isn't anything obvious that's mm-hmm. going on that needs to be addressed before assuming that it's just a behavioral issue that needs to be
exactly.
addressed.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't put this connection together. I mean, even in humans, like I think a lot of people don't realize how, mm-hmm. Psychosomatic, you could be so upset about something and have stomach aches or, it's all related.
Yeah.
So.
It's interesting because I want to ask Dr. Rachel about puppy cat's recent little biting behavior, but he doesn't show any other signs of distress in any way, and I don't think the biting is meant to be aggressive at all. So anyway, I'm gonna
talk
some time, and then we can do some moose. Yeah. So puppy cat is 10 years old, and he and his brother have been together since they were fostered, and we got them when they were about 6 months old, and just really chill indoor black and white cats, so cool, just really fun and loving and amazing. But about 6 months to 8 months ago, puppy cats started to nibble almost like a bite, but not to break skin or anything, to get attention. So when I'm just sitting there, let's say I'm working on my computer, he'll come over and he'll like bite my elbow or he'll bite my hand or he'll do something to get my attention to pet him. But I don't want to reinforce that behavior because I don't think that that's really wise in case there's a child present or something like that. So what should I do? Do you have any ideas?
Yeah. I mean, this is a common behavior.
Okay.
If it is for attention, which it sounds like mm-hmm. it could be. And certainly you're right that you don't want to reward that behavior by giving your cat attention at that moment,
mm-hmm.
Because if it works, then your cat will keep doing
it. Yes, he will.
Yeah. So, and it can intensify over time. So what you want to do is find, I don't know, sometimes this can happen if there's changes in interactions or, the owner becomes, more involved in something else in their lives and has less time for their cat, or maybe, I mean, there could be a number of different reasons, but usually it's just because the pet's been rewarded for it and it continues. So finding other time to spend with your cat would be one step, enriching your cat's life more. And I'm sure you've already done a good job of that. But what you could do is maybe provide more food dispensing toys, I like to call them, or food mm-hmm. releasing toys, or other games for your cat at the times where you're not able to pay attention.
Right.
So that could, that's one. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of it is management. Certainly, you're not going to reward the behavior, but you also want to give alternatives for things for your cat to do, because boredom can also lead to attention-seeking
right.
behaviors.
Right. Sure.
And then reward your cat when your cat's quiet and mm-hmm. and not demanding attention, and those can be, you know, times
sure.
where you engage. And
yeah,
well, usually what I do when he comes in the morning, like when I'm sleeping and he'll give me a little nibble, I go, puppy cat, no biting, mm-hmm. no biting. And he looks at me and he stares at me, and then he'll come right back and bite again.
Right. Oh my God, that's so
no
fun.
Biting, yeah. No biting,
because
well,
you're
quiet.
Getting attention.
Right.
I know.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I should say nothing.
Yeah.
I should just
ignore it.
Exactly.
Ignore.
It's like a toddler.
Exactly. Well, that's a whole other topic, but
yeah.
I would love to talk to you about that another time.
Yes.
Yes, it's, you know, very much so. Negative attention, like saying no, or, you know, some people will push their dogs down who jump up, that is interpreted as attention.
Okay,
so
good to know. So
it
nothing.
Can still be rewarding.
Yeah.
So the best thing that you can do in that situation is to ignore the attention-seeking behavior and extinguish it. So over time, what happens is when you ignore that behavior, mm-hmm. it will diminish, hopefully. And sometimes what can happen is the extinction burst, so it can get worse before it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
And often people, and even with barking dogs, you know, dogs
yeah.
who bark for food at the table, people will still reward that intermittently, and that's the worst kind of reinforcement, as you know. It's like
toddlers,
a slot
machine,
too, right?
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
a slot machine. So it's important to
yeah.
ignore the behavior, and if you are going to punish, obviously you don't want to do anything physical or
oh,
aversive,
right.
which I know you're not, but if you were to do something, mm-hmm. it could be more like a social isolation. You leave the room, or you could always place your cat in a more, you know,
right.
boring area.
Puppy cat
right.
in a
yeah.
timeout.
No, but I think the best thing that you can do is just to ignore
just
it.
Just walk away.
Yeah.
Or yeah.
yeah.
Okay. I can do that.
So puppy cat
That's
knows
good.
It's not going to work.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead. Go
so
ahead.
My question. All right. So my dog Moose is, he came out of my vagina, as we all know. I treat him so well. He gets so much attention, which is probably why you'll understand my question. But I had him since he was 9 weeks before my kids, and then I had my son 4 years later. So I think he really feels like he's my child. And sometimes I really feel like he's mine. But I've noticed that when I get on the floor with my kids, he gets so jealous. And then he starts going around and like grabbing pillows and just, you know, he wants to play during that time. And I think what's frustrating for me is I just can't play with him during that time because I'm with my kids. And so sometimes I'll get like a Kong and put, you know, treats in there. He'll get it out in a few minutes, but like then he's back, or he's just like, he's like crying because he wants attention. It kills me. So I give enough attention to him at the other time. So I can't even tell you it's like, oh yeah, he feels neglect. It's just at that moment, he's so incredibly jealous of my interaction with the kids. So I'd love any suggestions.
Have you tried to involve your kids in?
Sometimes we'll throw with him outside
okay.
or something like that. I mean, sometimes we just can't, you know, because we're inside or, you know, whatever, it's at night and, you know, different things. But
yeah.
but it's just hard because he's like crying and I feel so bad. But it's like sometimes I just can't give so much attention to everybody, you
right.
know?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
You can try to, I mean, I think the first thing that you've done is,
yeah.
is correct, is to give your dog something else to do.
Yeah.
Especially because one thing we don't want to teach pets is that when the children are around, that they go away and that the pets are ignored, or they're,
right.
you know, we as parents probably become a little bit more hard on our animals when their children are around.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the tendency from my experience with my clients. So, actually giving him something positive
yeah.
to do, like the stuffed Kong,
yeah.
is great. And sometimes it's just finding, especially in dogs who are really food motivated, finding
yeah.
other options that may last longer. So
okay.
it could be another food releasing toy, or you know, stuffing the Kong and freezing it.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Something longer lasting. Also teaching him maybe to be comfortable away from you for longer periods of time, and classically conditioning. So mm-hmm. teaching him, yes, when you're away from me, something good happens. Mm. Or, you know, some dogs like their crate, so they can be contained
safe.
To a crate.
Sure.
But it just depends on the dog. But that's a tough one because
yeah.
the motivation to be with you is so strong.
I know. Oh, it gets so jealous. Like, he literally.
So sweet.
I mean, I have like a behavioralist working with my toddler, and she's like, you need a behavioralist with Moose, like, during this time. Like, it's really funny. Like, he just.
Yeah.
But it's because we're so bonded.
Right.
I mean, it's so, you know, he's my baby.
Yeah.
But,
excuse me for my ignorance. What is a Kong toy?
Oh yes. Please, you're the expert.
it's a rubber it's a rubber toy that comes in various sizes with a hole. It's sort of cylindrical, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. and you can put things inside it, food.
Just like a chew toy.
Oh.
A chew toy.
Yeah, it's a chew toy, and
comes in different shapes and sizes, and
The Kong company, I think they make mm-hmm. different shapes.
Yeah, it's good. And my dog's like a piranha. Like, they have all different strengths. Like, he needs like the strongest of the strong. Like, they've got some for like little, you know, little not chihuahua, like Yorkies, or like, you know, and then they have one for like the really intense, you know, chewers.
You should try their puzzle games. So
please tell me.
Nina Odyssey toys are
what
great.
Are they called?
Nina Odyssey.
Okay, perfect.
It's a company, and it's just various puzzle games for dogs
That's
and
awesome.
Cats, where they have to learn to, you know, where which, you know, tile to lift up, where to find the treat,
That's great.
You know, uncovering. Things, turning things, and they have to. It's actually very good for their brain.
Yes,
you're mentally engaging as well as physically engaging. So, those are great toys, and they take a long time.
My dog's like Albert Einstein. He'll love this.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
this is awesome.
But that's great because I was looking for something else for him.
Yeah.
Because so that's awesome. Okay, I'll look that up.
And the other toy that I really like is called a Kibble Nibble Ball, and it's also a food releasing toy. And I actually feed my dog all of his food. In this ball. So his meals, instead of feeding him in a bowl, I feed him out of a food dispensing toy.
Wow.
Because it satisfies the normal behavior of hunting and foraging. And so, you know, there's two components to eating. There's the appetitive phase, and there's the consumatory phase. So the appetitive phase is where is the hunting and the foraging, looking for food. Whereas the consumatory phase is the consuming of food, consumption.
Inhaling.
So when we mostly when you feed a dog or a cat out of a bowl, you're only satisfying the consumatory phase. So
this is so interesting.
Feed your dog out of a food dispensing toy.
So is it big enough for like big food also, or is it just like little kibble pieces?
It depends on the toy, but the Kibble Nibble you can get in various sizes.
I love this.
Yeah, so it just depends on the size of the food. They're, you know, the kibble has to be able to fit through the hole, obviously.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is so cool. Oh, I'm so excited.
If you have a question for our in-house guest, Dr. Rachel Melamed, who is a board-certified veterinarian behaviorist, give us a call at 323-203-0815. You're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. This is so much fun.
I love this. I have so many questions.
I got to hog some attention here because Missy's coming back. Missy is just for a short time. So Missy is my daughter's Labrador Retriever, and she is basically an untrained dog. But where my daughter lives, she's got 10 acres of land. So the dog can run chases after turkeys, can just do whatever this dog loves to do. So when we had her at our house for a couple months last, just about a year ago, because my daughter was changing living situations. And so we took her because her dad didn't have room for the dog. And so she pretty much systematically destroyed our entire backyard. And we understand that she was a little bit bored, so we had to, you know, sort of alter our lifestyle. So my daughter wasn't there, so it was just Chris and me. But the worst part was there was a dog on the other side of the fence who is a mastiff. the 180-pound massive food named Daisy Bell.
Go figure.
Daisy Bell did not take fondly to Missy being in our backyard. So she was taunting her and tantalizing her. And Missy, who was a very non-aggressive dog at all, actually bit through a 2x4 on the fence to protect us. She was so upset and so distressed that this dog was, you know. And then when we would take her out for walks, she was like now nervous around other dogs. So I don't know the status of that currently, because when I went to visit Tiffany, she seemed, I mean, she's such a delightful dog. I think nobody would believe that this is a 10-year-old Labrador. She's as energetic as any puppy. But we're a little bit concerned because we redid our backyard with the Be Water Wise. We have all new stuff. But we did build a fence for her the last time. So there's a side yard fence. It's smaller. Tiffany's been, just to give you a little bit more context, Tiffany has been taking her to school with her and putting her in the car. And she seems to be, that's like her crate on wheels. And she seems to like that. So we're going to do a lot of that for sleeping. We're going to have her sleep in Tiffany's car. But when she's just out in the yard, what are some things that we should or shouldn't do just to make her feel comfortable? And if she has any of that distress, we're not going to have her near the fence where that other dog is.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So when the other dog is not outside, when Daisy's not outside, how is she?
Fine.
Oh.
Yeah. But Daisy's outside a lot. That Daisy's mostly an outside dog. Okay. Yes.
And when
But there'll be a whole fence between, like a fence and another fence.
So I guess you have to see how she does with even that separation.
Okay.
Because, you know, some dogs will still react to the sound of another dog barking, or if Daisy's aggressive, then it makes it more difficult because you can't control that stimulus. So, but you know, certainly what you've done is great. If there's any kind of visual barrier that you can put up along the fence so that she doesn't see Daisy.
She won't be able to see Daisy at all. Yes. And then we have the cutest little Lasso Opso in the next, the fence that she'll be sharing, who's not the most friendly with other dogs, but a tiny little dog. Missy's not threatened by her at all.
Yeah. What you could try to do is try to teach her to associate the neighboring dog or the sound of the neighboring dog with good things, like treats. But even that, you know, if it's so stressful for her, and if that's if she's exhibiting signs of stress, you know, some dogs are aggressive. You know, when there's a fence and there's two dogs, it's very common for dogs to become territorial. But if she's more stressed, and based on what you're saying, the fact that when you're on walks, she is more vigilant of other dogs. Then, you know, definitely try to use treats and try to minimize her time outside when that, I know that's
when there's
hard.
A lot of other dogs.
Daisy's outside, just to, you know, because what can happen is she can become sensitized, so that the more exposure she has to Daisy and the more stress, if, you know, that's what she's experiencing, the more stress she gets, the more it can start to generalize to other animals as well,
that's
other
what
dogs.
I think happened.
I think it's, you know, probably if you can minimize her exposure, that would be the best thing that you could do.
It sounds like getting some of these toys sound like to keep her really busy, too.
Right, it could. But again, if she's really stressed, then the toys, she won't be interested in food or toys. Or some dogs, you know, when they're in fight or flight mode, they're not thinking about their next meal. They're thinking about how can I get away, or how can I either flee or fight. So you can evaluate based on, you know, the new setup and see how things are. But if she seems to be exhibiting signs of stress, then I would recommend not having her out there when Daisy's out there, if possible.
And Tiffany will be around a lot because she's going to be
great.
So that'll be cool. And then one other piece to that is what's your favorite type of a leash for a dog who's not liking to be on a leash very much? The gentle leader or the...
I do like the gentle leader, or, you know, there are other head collar type devices. I like head collars, and I like harnesses, especially for leash pulling. And the gentle leader just is nice because it helps to gently turn the dog around if you have to. It helps prevent pulling, but it's not harsh. You know, I don't recommend using any kind of harsh prong collar or choke type collar, because there's actually evidence that these can cause damage. And I've seen it, so I don't recommend that. And also for dogs who, you know, what can happen is when you you know, if they're pulling and they feel this pain on their neck, they can learn to associate that pain with nearby stimulus. So inadvertently, you can teach a dog to be anxious or fearful.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, so much to know.
I know, this is fascinating. I love this. I have a general question because I know a lot of our listeners will be going away and giving their pets to other people during the holidays, and so I was wondering if you had any tips for if they're giving their pets to somebody else and so the pet's not in their home, what else can they do aside from, you know, bring stuff that's familiar and keep the same food and that kind of thing?
So I guess it depends on the dog. Some animals are pretty fluid
and adaptable.
And I think, as you said, you know, familiarity is key, and bringing, you know, even a crate if the dog likes a crate or is comfortable. Dogs tend to be they're den animals. So if not a crate, then setting up some sort of safe haven.
Yeah.
Especially during the holiday time when there's a lot of people coming over, even the friendliest dog can become stressed. So having some kind of, you know, safe haven or even a separate room, and, you know, there's all kind of medical considerations too with all the food going around and people feeding feeding the pets, to remember. And, you know, their own toys, their own food, like you said. And some dogs are more stressed. They may need to be addressed by someone like myself. But I think, you know, if it's not a problem, then just doing those things can really help.
I noticed when I went away one time, this is so weird because I am so in tune with my dog, but we went away for a while and she would send me pictures, you know, this is Moose. And I felt, God, he looks sad.
Oh.
And when I picked him up, he looked so sad. And it killed me. And I thought, oh, my God, like, I don't know. I mean, you know, obviously he missed us, but I got worried. I was like, I hope they treated him okay. And I never brought him back to that particular place. But it might have been because there was a lot of dogs there and maybe it was just too much for him. But it was just like somebody's home who, you know, rented it, who allowed other dogs to come at the same time, but it just killed me. Like, I literally saw from the picture, I'm like, oh my God, he just doesn't look happy, you know?
Yeah, when I leave, my dog gets, you know, stress colitis.
Yes.
So, although he, you know, he seems okay, I mean, according to my husband when I leave, but in the past, you know, he has sometimes had bouts of this stress colitis.
Oh.
So it is very common. But of course, if you know that your dog's, you know, seems stressed when you leave, or exhibit signs of destructive behavior, or urinating, defecating in the house, vocalizing, then just day to day, I'm you know, when you go to work, then your dog could have separation anxiety. But there's also other reasons that dogs can do those behaviors, of course, and that can significantly impact the welfare of your pet, and needs to be addressed for sure. And the only way to know really is to videotape your dog when see what they're actually doing.
Yeah. Is it worse if I go away and I literally have her put the phone up and I say, "Hi, Moose"? Is it like worse?
I don't know. I have the same question about my daughter.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
like if I talk to her when our nanny's at home and I talk to her on the phone, is that gonna? I don't know.
It's a real. I guess it can go either way. I mean, that's the truth.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
I've had, you know, when I've done some work with people when they want to talk to their families, like they're living out here, and so we'll Skype a family member just to say hi and, you know, do a little bit of therapy. And they'll always put the dog on the Skype, and dogs seem to like Skype. Respond to that. Cats don't.
Right.
They don't seem to respond to it.
But
the dogs will. They'll come and they'll look at the screen and they'll hear the voice and they'll be interested. It's really kind of funny.
It is kind
of
funny.
It's cute.
It's so funny.
Now, my cats are really hysterical. Like I said, they're not normal cats. They actually, Christopher says, when I'm about halfway down the block, they can hear my car and they come running to the door and they sit at the door and wait for me to come in.
Oh.
That's weird.
I love that.
How cats and dogs are so intelligent and they hear things that you would never think that they could hear. But they're you know, their sense of hearing is amazing. And when you pull up in the driveway or you're coming down the street.
Yeah, they can hear.
Yeah. But who would think the cats would do that?
Right.
Come meet you at the door.
And it's also, it could be a timing. Is there a certain time?
No, I come home at different times all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, like it could be like when the sun sets or whatever. No, it's just, I think it's the association of my car.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't do it to the other car when
Christopher comes
in. Now, I wonder if they would do it if he drove that car.
Uh-huh.
And then they would just walk away when he came in.
Right, exactly. It's like, oh, it's just you. Yeah, exactly.
No, they really like Christopher. Yeah. I told Christopher that he was in my life if he could get Prowler to like him.
Oh.
And Prowler was just mincemeat after like 3 minutes.
So cute. Yeah. So I know a lot of our listeners have aggressive dogs. So I do want to address that topic.
Oh, yeah.
In general, why can dogs be aggressive?
Okay. So there are so many different underlying reasons for aggression. Again, the first thing you want to rule out is that there isn't a medical issue. And if, you know, you could have a dog that has arthritis or, ear infection or some other painful condition. And certainly that could cause a dog to be more aggressive or more irritable. So the first thing is to get your, have your animal checked out by your veterinarian. But the most common form of aggression or the most common reason that dogs can display aggressive behavior is fear.
Right.
And I think that's important to relay because, historically and even currently, there's this myth that dogs are dominant when they're aggressive, and dominance does not equate to aggression. And what this idea of dominance does is I think owners tend to physically dominate their dogs and attempt to change the behavior, but this can actually increase aggression. And there's a study done by veterinary behaviorist Dr. Megan Heron through Ohio State, and she found that confrontational techniques are, in fact, more likely to escalate aggression and lead to more dog bites.
Oh.
And, of course, if
your
dog...
So to show your dog who's boss is not a good idea.
Right.
No. And the definition of dominance is priority access to resources. So, not walking or sitting properly doesn't have much to do with access to resources. And the other thing that can happen when people use these sort of dominance-based techniques is, obviously, if your dog is fearful and then you're rolling him on his back or, so-called alpha roll or punishing him in some other way or using confrontation to intimidate your dog, you're only escalating that fear and increasing the risk that you'll get bit and you're making it worse. So you're not actually changing the underlying motivation or addressing the underlying motivation for the behavior. So
this reminds me so much of parenting.
I was going to say.
I can't get over how similar.
Spanking children, all it does is suppress the behavior in the moment and then they act out someplace else. So it has no value.
Yes.
And damages the bond.
Yes, completely.
So it's the same.
So that's really helpful because I think if people, it helps with people to people and people to animals is that when we look at anger as really the extension of fear or stress, then it's so much easier to work with either a person or an animal from that place. You say, oh, you're doing this because you're afraid. Okay,
yes.
I get that.
You have sympathy.
That you're just an asshole.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It comes from somewhere. Yeah.
And, it helps if people can recognize signs of fear because I think, at least in my practice, people come in and they don't understand that their dogs are fearful and they're missing those very both obvious and subtle signs of fear.
Mm-hmm.
So I think by being able to understand and recognize signs of fear, people can say, oh, wow, he's submissive. He's rolling on his back because he wants to increase his distance and I'm scary to him in this moment and I should back off as opposed to, or he's growling and backing himself into a corner, not because he's dominant, but he's scared.
Mm-hmm.
So there's makes signs sense. To recognize.
That's good advice.
I have another question also. Notice my dog, he's great with smaller dogs. He's gotten bit a few times in the dog park because he's a whippet, and I think he's pretty fast. I don't know if other dogs think he prey or whatnot, but he's gotten bit a couple times. But it's really random. We'll just be walking, and smaller dogs are typically fine, but, once in a while, he'll go over and start to sniff and say hello to him, and then all of a sudden, and he doesn't bite, but he just barks. It's like out of nowhere. Like, it probably happens once out of every 10 times. So it's like, it's not often, but it's random. And I'm always like embarrassed because normally I'd be like, oh, he's not friendly, but typically he is. It's just sort of like this dog, the other dog gave him off weird energy or something.
Yeah, this sounds exactly like one of my recent patients.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's so weird.
And then you probably feel like embarrassed.
Yes, I'm like, I swear, he's normally okay. Is it just like he senses something strange or what?
I mean, dogs have their way of communicating with each other. So, maybe there's something about the other dog that's perceived as a threat, or maybe there's a certain action or a certain trigger
Okay.
that you know, I don't know, but yeah. something to watch for. But it's hard when it's 1 out of 10 times.
And yes.
Sometimes it can be hard to determine a pattern, whether yeah. it's a breed of certain breed.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. Like, yeah. he's almost racist. Like, it's like certain colors. You know what I mean? I'm like, moose, you discriminate, you know, but smaller dogs is not a problem. Mm-hmm. It's mostly bigger dogs out of the 10 times.
Right.
And it's usually like a black dog or like a darker. So I don't know what that's mm-hmm. about. But
what was Moose's early exposure to dogs, like early socialization?
Pretty good. Yeah. No real issues mm-hmm. except for when he got bit a couple times at a dog park and mm-hmm. it might have been. Right. It was definitely from a bigger dog. Mm. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So certainly, you know, that experience maybe.
Yes. Triggering yeah. him. Yeah.
That sparks a really important question. I'm sure a lot of people have. I know I have it burning in my head right now. What is the best way for dogs to meet?
Oh, yes. Mm. So, yes.
Should they be on leash? Should they be off leash? Should, you know, I know that it's
neutral
not
territory.
Right for one to be on a leash and the other one not to. But what's your thinking on that?
I think the best way for unfamiliar dogs to meet for the first time is on neutral territory, on leash.
On leash, neutral
yeah,
territory.
Yeah, at least at first.
Until so like on the street instead of on one person's property yeah. or the other or yeah. down the street or something like that? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's okay. good to know.
Yeah, and did you walk with them together?
Yeah, you can at first, you know, let them see each other from a distance and sort of evaluate, mm-hmm. look at, you know, and then gradually let them get closer.
Work together in a pack.
You can involve, you know, the use of treats to make positive associations and reward them
That's
for
nice.
Calm behavior when they're mm-hmm. together, and just, you know, gradually, you know, let yeah. them get used to each other on a walk, and then you can start to move them into, you know, right. the house.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a favorite treat that you like?
Cheerios.
Cheerios?
Interesting.
Yeah, I love Cheerios because they're low calorie. Oh. They're very easy to administer.
Oh my God, I love this.
And
brilliant.
Yeah.
So are there organic cheap. Cheerios?
That's a good question.
Because I know yes, there would are. Never allow for Missy to yes. receive anything other than organic.
Yes, yeah. yes. If you go to Whole Foods, they have like organic O's. Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. That's so funny. I love your daughter.
My little glad hippie. You asked that. Yes.
But that's a great question. Okay. And then what's your thoughts about raw food diets or freeze-dried raw?
Right. So, you know, raw food diets are not recommended by the American College of Veterinary Nutritionists. There's a lot of health issues related to that. And so, you know, in the whole, I guess the argument is, well, wolves, you know,
yeah,
survive off rough, but dogs aren't wolves, and
right.
there's probably a lot more death in wolves.
Yes,
so,
sure.
That's the recommendation by the American College of Veterinary Nutritionists. So.
Okay, yeah.
What is the thing with dogs and chocolate? Like, why does chocolate make dogs sick?
Poor
guys. You could never have been a dog, Kelly.
No, she's in a past
she's
life.
In love with dark chocolate.
Yeah, so, yes, you couldn't have been a dog.
No.
Or maybe you were a dog in your past life and you were so deprived
yes.
that now...
now I'm a human. Exactly.
So they don't have the enzyme to break down certain component of chocolate that can be...
okay.
basically poisonous to them.
So is there like a rule of thumb? Because I have a feeling obviously over the holidays, I'm sure some dogs are going to get some chocolate. Like, is there a rule of thumb that like over a certain amount, or is it, do you always take them in no matter what?
You know, generally there is sort of per weight, you know,
okay.
how much, but I don't know what that is offhand.
That's okay.
And what it's the baking chocolate. I mean, any
yes.
chocolate, you should be concerned because we don't know what's in it. But
right.
it's primarily the
higher percentage of chocolate
yes.
versus like the yeah milk.
Yes.
That's what I figured.
But I wouldn't recommend even
yeah. any of it. Right,
any
right, right.
chocolate,
and I remember grapes too. Right.
Yes.
Are deathly for kidneys. Yeah.
Grapes are lethal to dogs.
Why?
Yeah.
Well, that's so weird.
I mean, I don't know that we completely understand the physiology of it, or you know, the pathophysiology of it.
Huh.
But it can. It's very toxic to the kidneys.
Yeah.
They can actually cause dogs to go. One grape can cause a dog to go into acute renal failure.
Oh my gosh.
So it's not a matter of how many grapes they mm-hmm. have.
Wow.
So I didn't know
grapes.
That about
yeah.
grapes.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a good
grapes.
Thing I'm not a grape eater. I drink
right.
wine, but that's a different kind of
exactly.
grape.
Which oh I'm sure goodness. Is dangerous too for dogs.
Yes. I had a horse that liked beer.
Oh my God, that's great.
I know. And strawberry soda was crazy.
I'll eat anything, really.
Oh, wow. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Who would just know if you didn't know that about grapes and dogs? I would never think that. Mm-hmm. It would seem like a healthy food.
Yeah.
Oh, we got some extra grapes here. It's
exactly.
The fruit.
No, it's, yeah. And then what do you do for cats and dogs if they have digestive issues, stomach troubles? Like some people say rice. Is that right or not?
You know, I guess you should first consult with your veterinarian, because there's so many reasons that dogs and cats could have gastrointestinal issues or symptoms. So there's, you know, just like a dog can bite for, you know, 50 different reasons. A dog can vomit for the same, you know, 50 different reasons. So it could range from just dietary indiscretion, so having eaten something that didn't agree, or a food allergy, or inflammatory bowel disease, or there could be, you know, there's all sorts of reasons. So I guess the first thing to do is see your vet and have tests done. And you know, for food allergies, for example, sometimes we'll put dogs on what we call a novel protein diet to test if they have a food allergy. So it's basically a diet with a protein source that they've never seen before, their bodies have never seen before. So it could be something weird like venison or rabbit or duck or kangaroo. And so they only eat that diet for a period of 6 to 8 weeks and nothing else.
Oh my God.
And that makes my job really hard, because
exactly
the cases where I'm like, well, what kind of treats can I use?
Yeah, sure.
So there's
oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So I'm going to embarrass myself here, because I know I'm going to get a frown for this, but my cats are on a feed on demand type of schedule, because we go away a lot and a lot of weekends. So the person who comes to take care of the cats, it's just too hard to ask her to come twice a day to feed them. So historically, put them on one of those, you know, and they eat they're overweight for sure.
Wait, is it like an automatic feeder?
No, it's not like proportioned. It's like a feeder thing, and it comes out, and so they can eat pretty much
as much as they want.
They're not obese or anything. Mm-hmm. They play, and they're healthy. But if I ever wanted to transfer them over to, you know, feeding them, you know, twice a day,
right,
how would I do that? Because it seems like they would just be so miserable not having...
Yeah. Well, you know what you could do is you could give them a food dispensing toy, like I was talking about before, and just you'll give them a set amount, and the amount will depend on there's an equation to figure out how much an animal should eat. I mean, usually you go by the guidelines on the back of the bag,
sure,
but those are just guidelines. There's actually an equation to figure out how much should my cat of this weight and with these medical issues, how much food should the cat eat, how many calories. So you could figure out, you know, obviously you would just figure out how much food should your cat be eating, and then put it in, you know, a few different food balls. Mm-hmm. For cats, I like the exerciser ball. And also there's one called the Pipolino. I'm not trying to plug a certain product.
Do you like it?
You could even make something at home, like a homemade, you know, take a yogurt container and cut holes in it. But this you don't have to feed twice a day. You can leave food out all the time, like a set amount in a food toy, so it takes longer and they're sort of foraging throughout the day. Rather than eating two discrete meals. So you don't have to feed. You don't have to meal feed. In fact, cats prefer to eat, you know, in the field, they'll eat 10 to 12 small meals throughout the day.
Sure, that's smart.
They don't eat twice a day.
Okay, good, because it seems like they graze. They eat a little, they go off and play, they sleep, they eat.
Yeah, and my dog, you know, I leave food in his, you know, I feed him in his food ball, but I also have food in his bowl. And he just kind of grazes throughout the day, too, and that's okay.
Nice. I can't believe it. We're out of time.
I know. I was just thinking that.
We
are. Nuts.
This is just terrible. We're out of time.
Fast.
I have so many more questions.
I know. So do I.
Dr. Rachel, you're wonderful. Now, she's got the cutest website. Ready? BehaviorDogTor.com.
So
BehaviorDogTor.com. That's Dr. Rachel Melamed. And, awesome. Thank you so much for being on our show.
And you practice in LA?
I do. I have my own practice that's exclusive to clinical behavioral medicine. I mainly treat dogs and cats, but also get the occasional bird.
That's great.
And Yeah, and I wanted to mention...
Oh, tell me this book that you
got.
Yeah.
Yes. So the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists has written this wonderful book called Decoding Your Dog. And it's, you know, it says on the cover, the ultimate experts explain common dog behaviors and reveal how to prevent or change unwanted ones. And it's based on science. So I would say if you're looking for a good book... Mm-hmm. That would be the one that I would recommend. It's wonderful, and it's written by, you know, the scientific community. So it's very sound advice.
Oh, that sounds
wonderful.
Great.
Wonderful. Okay. And then next week, we have two guests. We have Dr. Peter Preskop for Conquer Chronic Pain, and we have Bill Phillips, who's a psychic medium. Expect the unexpected. Mm-hmm. Very exciting.
I know. It's going to be really cool.
Okay, another awesome show.
Yes.
Happy anniversary, Kelly.
Yes, you
Please,
too.
Everybody, go to our website. Please like us on Facebook and on Twitter.
And you could also put a review on iTunes if you found us through iTunes, which is great, too.
Yes, we need those reviews. Okay, so exciting.
Thank you guys so much. Have a great rest of your week.
Until next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.